Good morning. Hello from the Sustainability Podcast. This is Suraj Bhatia. I have a special guest here with me, Virgilio Viana. He's one of Brazil's leading experts on forestry, environment, and sustainable development. He was also Brazil's Secretary for Environment and Sustainable Development. Welcome, Virgilio.
Welcome also to you, Suraj. It's a pleasure to be with you and those that follow your broadcast.
Thank you. So if you could please give a short introduction on yourself.
Well, I am originally a forester by training, and then I did my PhD in evolutionary biology at Harvard University in the US. And then I had three professional lives, one in academia as a professor at the University of São Paulo, then as State Secretary for Environment and Sustainable Development of Amazonas for 5 years. And for the last 15 years, I've been working at FAS as the Director General, FAS Foundation for Amazon Sustainability, which is the largest nonprofit organization based in the Amazon.
Okay, perfect. Great. And I know you're doing really valuable work at the Foundation for Amazon Sustainability. So since you're fresh back from COP28, I'd like to get into it and ask you, they say during the past year, there's been a lot of discussion that biodiversity and decarbonization are inseparable, and we have to address the issue of biodiversity to address the issue of global warming. So give me your reactions from how the discussions went in COP28.
Well, I think slowly there is a growing awareness that nature-based solutions provide the best set of options to both mitigation and adaptation agendas for climate change. So as you well said, they are inseparable, the biodiversity and the climate agenda. And if one puts in comparison nature-based solutions with high-tech solutions, with even energy solutions, I think it's clear that nature-based solutions can have co-benefits that far outweigh the other options that we have in terms of biodiversity conservation, in terms of regulating rainfall regimes, in terms of social inclusion, and in terms of cost. So I think we have seen progress. And I like to describe COPs as having two separate events. One is the official negotiation, and the other is what I call the Global Congress on Sustainability, which was fantastic in Dubai. This is my 21st COP, and to me, this was the best COP by far, because I sensed in these meetings that I call the World Congress on Sustainability, a lot of momentum, a lot of energy, drive and of business and civil society organizations, academia, and subnational governments moving the agenda regardless of what is being discussed in the official side of the negotiations, which is always tough. And I learned to lower my expectations in the official negotiations, because the nature of the process is such that you have to end up in a low common denominator. So as everybody feel comfortable to agree. So having said this, I think we have made some progress in the formal side of the COP. But more importantly, that I'd like to highlight in this conversation with you here, is this perception that I think there's a lot of momentum that has been created in promoting change. And this gives not room for optimism, but I think it's sufficient to keep hope alive.
One of the, call it shortcomings or inability to reach an agreement was the agreement on standards for carbon credits trading. And what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think this was really a shortcoming. I for a long time, I've been a strong advocate of having carbon credits linked to nature-based solutions, because we simply cannot expect governments to fill the funding gap that we need. We need to mobilize trillions of dollars. And if we look at the fund for loss and damages, it was, you know, a minuscule amount of $400 million. So we have to go for different orders of magnitude. And for that to happen, I think we have to include the carbon markets. And of course, we have to make sure that the integrity of the climate regime is kept. There is good accounting, good methodologies, good certification processes. But I think this is something that should not be seen as an obstacle, because methodologies improve over time, certification schemes improve over time. And the more that we have business engaged in that trading, I think the better we get the methodology, the assessments, the audits, and all of that.
But they say that out of the two types of carbon credits, the government issued credits are fine, but the non-government issued credits are in many cases suspect in terms of verification and authenticity. So are you saying that this was a shortcoming, but we should have at least started moving forward on the government issued credits trading protocol? Or are you saying that the private credits also should be put into the mix already?
I think they should be put in the mix already. I think we are in an emergency, and we should not take longer than we have already taken. We have to move fast, and we will not have a perfect market for carbon, but I think we have to get it going. I think the ETS was, roughly speaking, or generally speaking, a success story. It was able to mobilize funds. It had good accounting, of course, problems here and there, but overall, I think it was positive. I think there are schemes in California and in other places around the world that are moving, and I think we should move faster in that direction. Again, because we need to mobilize billions and trillions of dollars, and these funds are simply not available in the budgets of governments worldwide.
And moving down to a different connected topic. Last time I met you in at the Brazilian Chamber, you gave a talk about the sustainability at the Amazon and the efforts to regenerate, rescue, whatever terms you might want to use. How are the discussions on the Amazon at COP28, and what are your general observations of what we need to do?
Well, Brazil came to COP28 with a very positive figure. Deforestation was reduced by around 50% over the last year, this year compared to last year's. And that was very positive. Also, we brought to the COP the results of a high-level presidential meeting, which took place in August this year, that was able to bring together all the presidents of the Amazon countries. And they signed a declaration which was very positive in general. And more important than the writings that came out of that meeting was the commitment of having a sort of a common agenda for sustainable development. And again, one has to take the broader view. It's not simply an issue of deforestation when we talk about the Amazon, is an issue of the development pathway that needs to change. And that development pathway, and it should not only have goals such as reducing deforestation and degradation, but also goals of social inclusion, reduction of poverty, and promoting a green economy, a style of development, a green economy based on standing forests that is what the governments that met in prior to the COP have agreed. So that was positive. The other side is that I think we still have a shortage in terms of funding for not only the Amazon, but also other tropical rainforests around the world. And as we were saying before, they are essential to keep hope alive for the climate that we have ahead of us. So I think that is on the negative side. I think we haven't come up with the funding yet. But there are interesting moves, especially in the business side. And again, I put more of my hopes in arrangements that are taking place outside of the budgets of governments, because governments not only have limited funds, but they're very bureaucratic. And I think we have to overcome that bureaucracy. And that includes the bureaucracy of multilateral banks and development agencies that are extremely bureaucratic. And we have to find ways of speeding that process of delivering funding so that it reaches on the ground. Because oftentimes we see these pledges that people make that, oh, there'll be this, you know, billion here, not a billion there. But the time that it takes from that declaration to plant a tree, you know, sometimes is 5 years, 10 years. And we simply cannot wait that long.
Perfect, thank you. And finally, before we sign off, any final observations that you'd like to make? And is there any commentary on the wording of transitioning away from all fossil fuels as it came out of COP28?
Well, I think we have to create financial mechanisms that link the fossil fuel economy to the green economy. And that includes protecting of rainforests. For a long time, I've been advocating a $1 per barrel of a carbon tax, which would be simple. And it's around $35 billion a year. And that would not hurt the market, since price of oil goes up and down several dollars, maybe even in a single day. So I think we have to create links between oil producing countries and countries that can deliver nature-based solutions that are quickly and effective. And there have been some discussions. We are engaging with discussions with some Arab countries that may be becoming partners of our challenge, not only in the Amazon, but also other tropical rainforest countries. So I think if we're able to link that transition away from fossil fuels declaration to transition in conjunction with support to nature-based solutions, I think that would be my hope for the upcoming COPs and climate meetings.
We have come to the end of our podcast. Very fascinating conversation. So thanks for joining me. Thanks everyone for listening. Until next time, thank you and namaste.
And namaste. All the best.